Welcome to another episode of the Reboot Chronicles, a no-holds-barred forum with global leaders, authors, entrepreneurs, and CEOs about how organizations stay focused on growth and innovation in unprecedented times. I'm your host, Dean DeBias, coming to you live from Reviv's North American headquarters in Chicago, and we would like to thank you for joining us from around the globe today. I'd like to welcome the president and CEO of Suburban Propane, Mike Stavala, to the Reboot Chronicles. Founded 95 years ago, the $1.4 billion company is one of America's top providers of propane, heating oil, natural gas, and even electricity in some areas, something we all can't live without. With about 3,300 employees and 700 locations serving millions of customers, Mike has got his hands full and has an amazing company that's gone through some reboots. He's rebooted Suburban's growth and innovation. He's doubled down on hiring and educating and aiding military veterans. And he's an outspoken advocate of the green qualities and propane gas as a solution and a pathway towards sustainable energy, which everybody wants to talk about these days. Mike, it's good to see you.
Great. Thanks for having me, Dean.
Absolutely. It's most people don't talk about, you know, plumbing and heating and electricity. And, you know, in some countries, it's like it doesn't always flow. So I view this as critical infrastructure, not just, you know, your average commodity that you have to buy. But I was compelled when I did some research on you guys as your original story. Maybe you can tell us back in 1928, it was kind of rebooting an industry at the time. How'd this get started?
That's a great American entrepreneurial story. Our original founder moved out to the suburbs in New Jersey. His wife was very accustomed to cooking with gas, and they didn't have a gas hookup to natural gas lines. Didn't get out to that part of the state at the time.
And just to be clear, we're talking about the horse and buggy days here, everyone.
And so he needed to solve a problem. Obviously, if it was important to his wife, it was important to him, and so he developed the concept of home delivery of bottled gas, which was propane gas, and the propane industry got its start, and we're proud that Suburban Propane's roots date all the way back to the very founding of the industry, and the attributes of propane really haven't changed in that time period. It's still known first and foremost for its versatility. It really, because of the portable nature, because of all the different applications that it can serve, whether it's agricultural, commercial, industrial, residential, you name it, transportation, it really is a very versatile energy source that is affordable, domestically produced, and actually is quite clean. And so it already meets a lot of the low carbon standards that are being set today for the future. So, you know, that original concept of localized distribution of a critical energy source is really what we are today.
Yeah, I can't imagine, let's just call it 100 years ago, trying to figure out how to, I mean, this is the only form of energy that has to stay compressed. You know, back then that was not an easy thing to do. And, you know, so you flash forward, you know, 90 years later, you jump in from CFO to CEO. It's a transition a lot of our guests have made these days of public companies, large multi-billion dollar public companies. What was that journey like for you going from CFO to CEO? And then how did that perspective help you reboot the company yet again, you know, 100 years later?
Well, it was interesting because, you know, I was always part of the leadership team. You know, I started here in 2001 as the controller. I was sort of brought in from the accounting profession, but I was really brought in to help with a lot of the M&A strategy that we were looking to do to diversify the platform in the early 2000s. We wound up focusing very much internally throughout the 2000 through 2010 period. And I was part of that internal sort of reboot of the company's business model. And then I was fortunate enough to take on the CFO role in 2007. And at that point, we started acquiring some businesses. We did a large acquisition in 2012 to double the size of Suburban. We were the fourth largest distributor at the time, and we acquired the third largest propane distributor. And that was a major transformational acquisition for us. And I was part of that team that identified and brought in the deal and then ultimately integrated it. And then 2 years later, I was fortunate enough to be able to take on the CEO role. And what I like to say about that transition is I felt as though I had to subtly change the culture of the organization without the organization seeing it. And why is that? Well, I was part of the culture. So I needed to make sure that we were not, we weren't negative. We weren't having a negative connotation about where we've been, but we wanted to transform the business to be more collaborative, more open, more family oriented, more nimble than we were in the earlier part of my tenure here. And part of that was really driving a family oriented culture. So subtly creating that culture without people feeling as though we were saying that we were doing it all wrong up till that point was an interesting shift that I think was very important for the company and where we sit today 10 years later.
Sounds like it paid off. When you say family culture, I mean, we've had some family enterprise CEOs on here like Amway, you know, $8 billion or whatever it was at the time. This is not a family company anymore. You're saying, hey, take a public company. This is so important. It's one of the reboot principles of how you kind of invest in people and platform and passion. But the people and the passion is often ignored in the innovation track. It's all about the platform, which is new products and services and ventures and acquisitions. And how'd you make it more family oriented?
Well, the beauty of our business model is we're local. We are truly a local distributor of energy. And so you referenced it at the beginning. We have 700 physical locations throughout the country.
Yeah.
And every one of those locations is a team, and they are serving their community. You know, they're embedded in the community. A lot of them are volunteer firefighters. A lot of them are volunteer with the local Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts. A lot of them get involved in different aspects of the community. And when I say family oriented, no, this is not a family business today, but it started as one.
Right.
You know, our original founder was in his family for decades. And, you know, we went public in 1996, and we still try to maintain that family oriented culture, even though the original namesake is no longer part of the business.
It's very tough after you scale a company over $1 billion to keep any type of a fun growth culture, family culture going. Any secrets you want to share with everyone?
It's all about communication. It's you know, first of all, we acknowledge that our people are absolutely, I know it sounds cliche-ish, but our people really are our most important asset in this company.
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones that are out at 2 o'clock in the morning in the middle of a snowstorm to make a delivery of propane to make sure that families have the comfort and safety that they rely upon us for. They're the ones that are answering the phone when there's a situation that our customers are dealing with that they need our assistance with. They're the ones that go out and fix a problem through our service techs, go out and diagnose and fix problems for our customers.
Yeah,
so they need to have the passion for the brand. They are truly our brand ambassadors. That's the way we look at it. And so the more that we can communicate, the more that we can make them connected to Suburban Propane as a brand and as a family culture, the better off they're going to want to serve their customers and our customers.
You know, Mike, I used to work at FedEx and done a lot of work with long ago, the Ritz-Carlton brand. And both of those brands in their early days would allow employees to not just make mistakes, but to actually spend the company's money in order to make the situation right for the customer. They'd give them a little bit of flexibility. And there were safety issues involved, probably not as much as explosive propane, but there were some. So you can't give them too much leeway, but do you give it a certain sense of autonomy? Obviously, to the local branch guys, you probably the manager, but Yeah. Do the employees feel free to like just make it right for the customer type of attitude? Does that play into it anymore?
Absolutely. Especially in our model. You know, I think we made it, we have what I would consider a very local business that is supported by a large national presence.
Right.
But it all happens on the front line. And so we hire the managers that are running our local stores, and a lot of them may have 30 to 40 employees that they're responsible for. They may have 10,000 customers in the local market that they're responsible for. They may be responsible for millions of dollars of controllable profit on an annual basis. They truly are entrepreneurs. They make the decisions. We give them guidance. We give them support. There's a lot of functions that they don't have to worry about, but right. It's their business. And it's not a franchise, but it's truly they own that market.
I was just going to point that out. It's like a lot of CEOs can say that because they're franchised. You're not. You're in a command and control environment. And what about innovation? And well, actually, let's finish up with your story. So that transformation from CFO to CEO, what was your biggest challenge personally? Not the company, but you.
That's a great question, Dean. I mean, I think, you know, first of all,
we've all gone through it. You know, that first CEO gig is not, oh boy, I won't tell you about mine.
It's interesting. Somebody sat me down and they made a comment. And I honestly say, I feel like they were wrong. But I'll tell you the guidance that was given to me. Someone said, it's lonely in the corner office. And I get what they mean. I get the fact that there's this revelation when you sit in the office for the first time and realize at this point the buck truly does stop with you. And right. That's true. But I feel like, first of all, I'm surrounded by an incredible team. And I feel like my style is to be very collaborative. And so I never feel alone. Mm-hmm. I have no problem making the ultimate decisions, but I like to get the feedback of my team and really collaborate to get to the right answer and then ultimately make the decision. But I don't feel as though I have to sit in the office by myself and stress over the decision. And so I think that was some interesting mm-hmm. leadership guidance that I got yeah. that I felt maybe was misguided.
Yeah, but it might have made you more sensitive to it, which is good. A lot of CEOs say, well, I just got rid of my office. I sat in the cubicle. I'm like, that's window dressing. It doesn't help. It doesn't help. They just have to hear you on phone calls. But I digress. So let's go back to your strategy. Public company, you're given guidance. You know, you need to probably be twice your size sometimes by the end of the decade. Who knows? But you know, what's your strategy and how does it tie into so the growth strategy in general? But so how do you keep an innovation focus that's going to get you there? How are you going to get there? And under the auspices of, you know, what we talked about a little bit in the warm up, which is, you know, what are you going to build? What are you going to buy? What are you going to borrow? And how does that all come together as CEO? And is that something you personally can spend a lot of time on? Because I call it the fun stuff, but it's not always doesn't always get enough attention. So what's it look like for you?
Well, it starts with our core propane business. And I know a lot of people want to say that they're the best at this or they're the best at that. We truly get credit in every corner of the investment community for being best in class operators
in safety too. You've got high safety ratings, which is good.
That's right. So we truly know how to run this business. The tenure in this company is unbelievable. Very something I'm very proud of. And so it starts with being the best operator, the best in the market in terms of total value to our customers, because the propane industry can really be a cash generator. Okay, and so the challenge that you have with the industry is there is the weather dependency. So depending on the severity of weather from one winter to the next is going to drive demand one way or another. So you have to be able to be flexible in your cost structure, to be able to withstand some of that and with your balance sheet strength. And two, it's a very mature industry. So there's not, you know, double digit growth that we're just going to go out and get by creating a new way of a new form of propane. That's not going to happen. But we have a great business that generates excellent cash flow. We happen to run it really, really well. And so our challenge now is, how do we create the growth engine? How do we foster the cash flow generating capacity that we have to then channel that into a growth engine?
That's my question. That's a great way to phrase it. Thank you.
Yeah. So I think it starts with knowing who we are, knowing our core competencies, and who we are at the core. And so what are we? We are truly, I like to call it, I said it, I think once before, we're truly a trusted local distributor of a critical energy source. And as society seeks to transition to cleaner energy, that need for that localized distribution is never going to go away. We're not going to have power plants bringing electricity from offshore wind and getting it out to every rural community in America anytime in any of our lifetimes. We're always going to need to get energy to where the people are, to where the activities occur, and to where the demand is. And that's who we are. So as society transitions to renewable energy, we need to find our way to participate in the supply chain for getting that energy to local communities. So we are, you know, we created Suburban Renewables, which is our new subsidiary that's focused on growth in renewable energy production and distribution. We started with two investments that we have small minority stakes in.
Are these startups or what are they?
Yeah, so they're brand new technology startups. One is a company called Oberon Fuels that makes a product called renewable dimethyl ether, which really is a
so these are kind of waste-based products.
Yeah. Right, so it's produced from waste streams, and renewable DME, as they call it, when you blend it, it actually is a molecule that looks very similar to propane, so it blends very well together. Mm. But if you blend a low-carbon propane with a ultra-negative carbon RDME produced from renewable, from, you know, waste streams, you can actually get to a point where propane approaches net zero, which is really the goal, right? We could say zero emissions and you get there by electricity. Well, that's one way of getting there. Another way of getting there is through innovation. So that's one technology. So we are actively, we can't just do that overnight. We have to actively test the equipment, test the applications that we use propane in today to see how they interact with different blend levels of these products. So that's a company that we now own about a 38% stake in, and they're pre-revenue at this stage. The second investment we made was a company in the hydrogen space called Independence Hydrogen, and they are creating a localized production local distribution network for clean hydrogen. And so it looks, their model is very similar to what we've been doing forever, but it's very different in the hydrogen space. The hydrogen model is typically dominated by big industrial gas companies that deliver hydrogen in large liquid quantities over large distances. And so this is to really get locally produced clean hydrogen out to local communities. And we own about a 25% stake in that company, which is also today still pre-revenue. And then we acquired a platform of renewable natural gas assets that we own outright. So we're now producing upwards. We will be, once full capital deployment over the next 18 months, we'll be producing about 850,000 MMBTUs of renewable natural gas. Our largest facility is already operating down in Stanfield, Arizona, where we have 55,000 dairy cattle that we're accumulating the manure and converting that into renewable natural gas for direct pipeline injection into the into an adjacent natural gas pipeline. So that's
sort of our heard too many of those scaling well. That's pretty encouraging.
Yeah, this is an interesting this particular facility is an interesting model because it's a basin approach, as opposed to probably what you've heard a lot about so far is going out to an individual small farm, putting a digester on and producing natural gas. And that, there's lots of that. We have a facility just like that that's being constructed. This one actually creates scale by having all the digestion happen in one large facility where we can keep bringing in multiple dairies in the local area. And there happen to be a heck of a lot of dairy farms in the southern Arizona area.
No, I love what you're doing. I might start using you as another example in a couple of my keynotes where we talk about the rebooting your organization. It's balancing that build by borrow, and you're doing a nice job. How about the borrow side? Any cool partnerships that you've got going where you don't necessarily invest or acquire?
So we also have a few collaborations that we're working on. We did partner with a Japanese company, the largest hydrogen distributor in Japan, and the third largest. Same company, third largest propane distributor in Japan. They are very interested in learning more about our business model here in the United States. And we're very interested in learning about their hydrogen model in Japan. And so we've been collaborating for the better part of the last 18 months on sharing best practices, and as well as testing this blended product that I referred to before, which is the RDME blended with propane, and so we're testing. They're testing sort of appliance heating applications in Japan. We're testing forklifts and over the road engine applications here in the United States, and we're collaborating to share the results of all that.
Oh, I forgot most forklifts are propane. So you talked about hydrogen. I do coaching for the NSF where they fund millions and hundreds of millions actually in universities. So we're coaching teams. And there are these all types of energy projects. And one of them that you guys should probably be involved in, but one of them is the kind of like on-prem, I don't know if it's hydrogen or these local generation stations that, you know, maybe the DOD would use, but eventually could be in a home. Is that in our lifetime kind of a thing, or is that pretty far out on your roadmap?
I do think the technology in the hydrogen space is going to develop. I just think we're probably, for something like that, I would say we're probably 15 to 20 years away. But I think for, you know, solving some of the hard to abate over the road transportation for, say, large trucking, I think we're probably, you know, less than a decade away from helping solve the lowering the carbon intensity of over the road trucking with hydrogen fuel cell trucks that require a hydrogen network to refuel, similar to the way we refuel with diesel and gasoline today.
Yeah, that's what they told me. So I just wanted to do a fact check with you. Okay, so under your tenure, so you're at about a $1.4 billion annual revenue top line now, very profitable. When you look out on the horizon, what's your legacy going to be? I'm like, where do you want this company in 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think with this push for energy transition, one, we need to preserve propane's role. So I think maintaining our position in propane, maybe even growing it, but again, that's been, you know, decades and decades of challenges in trying to really grow double digit. If we can grow 1%, that'd be great, right? But if we could be flat in propane through this transition, that would be a great accomplishment. But then creating that growth engine that takes on a much bigger percentage of our overall revenue and profitability, such that, you know, we have a more logical pathway towards growth that our investors, our stakeholders, our employees can see, as opposed to being worried about being in a very mature industry that doesn't have that logical growth engine behind it. So I think by creating an arm that becomes 25, 30, 40% of our business in the next 5 years, yep, would be a heck of an accomplishment. As long as it's done the right way, right? Yep. The worst deal is the deal that you did yesterday. It was a bad one. So
yeah, and there's a lot of bad policy come and go that affects your industry too. But we won't digress into the politics today. But you know, I'm struck by all the decisions you're making. You know, you're not really a science company. Do you have a lab? You have a chief science officer in a lab and all that stuff, or it's usually not something companies like you have. So how do you even? Some of these partnerships are helping you with that, obviously, because they have them, especially yes, the revenue ones.
You're right. We're not an R&D shop. We're not. We do.
But you're investing in it in a different way through partnerships and investments.
Yeah. So there we learn, because those entrepreneurs, I think that's been a benefit to us. You could look at those deals and say, well, so far they haven't produced anything yet. Well, that's okay. We are learning a lot.
They're very passionate.
Partnering with entrepreneurs that have a true passion for their idea, their technology, and their desire to create scale. We're learning a ton about how they think, how to interplay their future model with our expertise. So that's part of it. The other part of it is we did hire a renewable energy executive that reports directly to me that has a background in chemistry and environmental justice law. It's got a really good, interesting background that I think rounded out the team. You know, the team here is a very well-rounded business acumen, and I think he rounds it out with really good engineering, chemistry, environmental commitments.
So, Mike, we really want to thank you for joining us today. It's great insights from what I view as another piece of critical infrastructure around the globe. Quite frankly, let's talk about you. Any personal reboot stories you want to share, or any tidbits about? Hey, you need to recruit the next generation of leaders into this company so they can take your job someday. What do you say to these folks? What can they learn from you personally?
Well, I think for me, I like to consider myself very well grounded in family and humility.
Very.
And I never really take for granted that anything in life, but I also don't ever go into the situation thinking that I'm the smartest guy and that I know everything about what to do in every situation. And so I'm constantly trying to challenge myself and the team around me to really think differently and always look to grow both professionally, personally, and for the organization. And you raised a point that I think every business is struggling with right now that we're talking a lot about, which is that next generation. The generation that is coming up now, how do we engage them in the kind of thinking that we have here to preserve, a pretty blue collar business that isn't going to go away anytime soon? It's not the sexy new toy. It's not, high end technology. But it's an important, as you say, critical infrastructure. How do we get people to want to be excited about a career in propane?
Would you say that's one of your biggest challenges?
It is. I referenced earlier about tenure. One of the stats I'm really proud of is we have 30% of our employees have been with us for more than 15 years.
That's like ESOP stats where, everyone's an owner. That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most tech companies, they'll never touch you on that.
Right. And yet our turnover of our first year people is our highest.
And that's why I asked. Yeah, exactly.
That's the big challenge, because it doesn't make sense. You know, if we can hook them, we've proven that we can keep them. It's creating that hook that they want to stay beyond the first year. They don't get so enamored by the next shiny toy.
Sounds like a nice problem to have. Thanks for joining us, Mike. I really appreciate it. You've been listening to Mike Stavala. He is the CEO of Suburban Propane. Check him out sometime. This is Dean DeBias with the Reboot Chronicles. I want to thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you all soon.